Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Thursday, September 13, 2018. Some Juba residents embrace Wednesday's signing of the revitalized peace deal.
Our politicians from different opposition, they come together as one family so that we come and sit, so that we come and carry out the development. Because development will not come unless our politicians have a political will.
And the Washington-based Enough Project says the peace is not the best for the people of South Sudan.
Any peace deal that does not really have very strong and concrete measures to arrest that corruption is going to be a problem. So in particular, when you look at the provisions governing the sharing of oil revenues, gives the principals too much power.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese warring parties signed what they say is a final peace agreement aimed at ending the civil war that has killed tens of thousands of people and displaced millions in South Sudan. The deal was signed in the presence of the Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed and regional leaders along with foreign diplomats. Reactions from Juba residents is mixed. Winnie Chirino has more for VOA from Juba.
Some residents of Juba town say they are cautiously optimistic after the peace deal was signed in Ethiopia's capital Addis Ababa on Wednesday. Emmanuel Agele, a resident of the Gudele suburb, says he believes peace will prevail because both the government and the opposition leaders are eager to end 5 years of violence that have plagued the country.
Surely it is going to hold because everybody is tired of war. The war has changed the situation of the country completely, and I'm sure that everyone doesn't want that kind of situation to go on, whether on the side of the opposition or the government. All the people are now desperate.
Lawyer Bot Manuel Bot says he is tired of witnessing fighting and he hopes that the leaders have learned from their past mistakes.
It should not be the business as usual. We have seen previous peace agreements signed. We have seen citizens jubilating, but eventually we didn't see result. So hopefully by this time around, our leaders have learned the hard way. And by saying this, we mean as guns have to be silenced, IDPs have to be repatriated back to their homes, the refugees have to be returned to South Sudan. Security has to be granted for the citizens to pick up their livelihoods once again.
But Atem Jongahai, a student at the University of Juba, says he is suspicious that lasting peace will come to South Sudan as a result of the signing of the peace deal. He says he still has vivid memories of what happened in July 2016 at the Presidential Palace in Juba.
For this agreement, I'm not that satisfied. Then being, there was a fee signed. The first fee that was signed was not that implement. There are some areas that, you know, they spend some days and then it break out again. So this one here, anyway, this agreement that they are signed, that they are brought to people outside Sudan, but maybe there is something behind this, like what happened in Yewon. Of course, it was not expected to happen, but it was happened suddenly.
Another student at the University of Juba, Matur Dor Katuo, says the leaders should sympathize with ordinary citizens. He says the war has claimed many lives and displaced hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese, both internally and across South Sudan's borders.
If they feel in the way we feel as citizens, I hope they will finally bring peace, because this war will not make a way forward for the country. We feel very sad. We feel discouraged. We feel the reason as to why we fought for independence is not actually, it's not what has been actually realized in the country.
Peace activist Joseph Oliver says young South Sudanese should monitor the implementation of the deal. He says young South Sudanese women and men have been the victims of all kinds of abuse in the country during the fighting.
I'm not so much excited, I'm not so much annoyed, but I'm just there thinking, okay, it has come, what else are we looking for? We have to also be following the implementation, because the most important thing is the implementation. Over all these years, implementation has been the challenge, so my call to the youth is to start looking up and coming up with strategies of how we can follow up this and also participate actively into this. Because each time these things come, the civil war or the whatever disagreements that they have, it is the youth that is mostly affected.
Professor Adam Chalong teaches at the University of Juba. He says South Sudanese leaders should focus on development programs during the transitional period.
Our leaders should think that this is their opportunity to give services to the people. South Sudan is behind simply because people have forgotten development. There are bad roads, communication is not there, no hospital, therefore you have South Sudan is suffering health-wise, and no education.
Chalong says education should be the first priority of the government.
The bigger budget should be given to education. Through education, they will be able to fight ignorance and poverty. But without developing education in this country, we will be led by ignorance, we will be led by poverty. So education should come first, and not security.
Many residents of Juba Town have welcomed the peace agreement with a lot of suspicion. Some are wondering if the leaders will implement the deal. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
President Salva Kiir returned to a group of jubilant supporters in Juba this afternoon after signing the revitalized peace deal with rebel leader Riek Machar and other opposition groups in Addis. Mr. Kiir's advisor on security says the government has resolved all outstanding issues with the opposition and the deal gives South Sudanese an opportunity to embrace peace. For VOA News, Wake, Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
President Kiir landed at Juba International Airport and was received by top government officials led by First Vice President Taban Dengai. A handful of students and some members of the Red Army Foundation also greeted the president. Speaking in Arabic, Tut Kew, the president's advisor on security, told journalists the agreement marks an end to violence in South Sudan.
The president has signed the peace in Addis Ababa and there will be no more conflict in South Sudan. All the opposition parties have also signed the peace agreement. We had negotiations in Khartoum for 3 months on the outstanding issues which have been the causes of political conflict and disagreements in South Sudan.
The signed deal on the resolution of conflict in South Sudan returns Riek Machar to his previous position of first vice president during the 36-month transitional period. Information Minister Michael Makwe has been on record several times asking IGAD mediators not to allow Machar to work with President Kiir, saying Machar can only stay in South Sudan as an ordinary citizen because of his political differences with President Kiir. Tut Kew says those differences have all been put aside.
All the outstanding issues, we have resolved them and everybody signed. Actually, the unresolved issues were simple ones that cannot bar the signing of the peace agreement. Those were just political issues, but everything has been resolved already.
Tut Kew says the new deal gives hope to South Sudanese and will end the suffering of internally displaced persons and refugees.
We want to tell you all that there is peace now in South Sudan. There is no conflict anymore. We agreed on peace already, and civilians in South Sudan can now have peace. And people in foreign countries and all displaced people can now return to South Sudan unless somebody who refused.
Some South Sudanese say they want to see the peace deal implemented. Here are a few voices of some of the Juba residents who came to the airport to welcome Kiir home.
I warn our leaders, on the top is our dear president, Salva Kiir Mayardit, to encourage our politicians from different opposition, from different angle of political appellation, so that they come together as one family. They come together as one entity, so that we come and sit, so that we come and carry out the development. Because development will not come unless our politicians have a political will.
The implementations, I want to see everybody to be on board. One, two, everybody to respect and to see the community first to be on top agenda than rather than your interests.
Those were Juba residents Reverend Paulo Malual Ajak and Captain Jafar Manoa. Two opposition groups, the National Salvation Front and the People's Democratic Movement, refused to sign the deal. The leader of the National Salvation Front, General Thomas Cirillo, has said the deal does not address the root causes of the conflict in South Sudan. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Washington. The Washington-based Enough Project issued a statement on Wednesday saying the deal rewards the culture of impunity and corruption. Brian Adeba, Enough Project's Deputy Director of Policy, says the deal is not the best for South Sudan.
We are more than pleased to see that there is a deal that has been signed. However, we're saying that we have significant concerns about some stipulations in the agreement that could unravel it and possibly return the country to war. I think that when we look at the agreement, what we really forgot about was the African Union Commission of Inquiry in October 2015 that identified that corruption is central to the ongoing conflict in South Sudan, and therefore any peace deal that does not really have very strong and concrete measures to arrest that corruption is going to be a problem. So in particular, when you look at the provisions governing the sharing of oil revenues in this agreement, I think that it gives the principals too much power to oversee the spending of such revenue. And that, I think, is very problematic. And I call upon the civil society and the legislative assembly and other organs of the government to clearly monitor this provision, because it has the potential to return us where we started in 2013.
And what is new with this deal? I mean, what is the difference between this deal and the 2015 deal that collapsed? Is there anything significant that struck your attention in this new deal?
I think that one of the things that is concerning is the weak provisions regarding on security sector reform, especially on the security of the armed combatants when they return to Juba. And I think that one of the other weak points about it is also the failure to really check the powers of the National Security Service of South Sudan. And I think that's problematic. The service itself right now has immense powers of detention without trial. And I think that if we are talking about creating a conducive atmosphere for the implementation of the peace agreement, the act that governs the work of the National Security Service has to be reviewed immediately. And the provisions that allow for the arrest and detention of people without trial repealed immediately. Otherwise, I think we're not going to have a smooth implementation here.
And these parties have been negotiating for more than a year. And now there's a deal on the table, and the Enough Project is saying it doesn't address all these issues. Is there any perfect deal that will address all the issues of South Sudan?
There's nothing like a perfect deal, but at least you have to strive to have a minimum of provisions in any agreement to prevent the status quo from returning. And I think that this is the failure of this agreement.
But corruption seemed to have been an issue in South Sudan for quite a long time, and expecting it to be addressed in a peace agreement is a long call, Brian. Don't you agree? Don't you think so?
It has to start with strong provisions in the peace agreement, and then that will be translated into other into the legislation, into the organs that will arrest corruption and all that. And if you have those weak provisions in the agreement, I think then you're just having a recipe for disaster.
And how about the role of the international community? You are calling on civil society groups to watch over this agreement keenly. How about the international community? What would you expect them to do?
I think the international community has a huge role to ensure that the stipulations of the agreement are respected, are adhered to. And that can only come with some pressure. And that pressure can be through financial sanctions and other pressures, including an arms embargo. Otherwise, if we leave the principles in this agreement to do as they wish, I think we're not going to have an agreement.
That's Brian Adeba, Deputy Director of Policy at the Enough Project. He was speaking with me earlier today here in Washington. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, Ugandan opposition leader has a message for South Sudanese. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you make emotional decisions or logical ones?
I make both, but I think I make more logical decisions than the emotional ones.
I mostly make emotional decisions and it mostly works out. I don't really regret making it.
These two, they always move simultaneously. The emotional one, when you lost the dear one, of course you will be painted and you will lose your control. You'll be imbalanced, and when you are imbalanced, you will not actually have the control of your emotion, and there you find yourself losing the emotion.
Sometimes I make emotional decisions, but I later regret that.
I don't lash in making decisions. I sit down and think on how I'm going to make that decision to be a plover and a good one.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Robert Kyagulanyi, the Ugandan musician turned opposition lawmaker, popularly known by his stage name Bobi Wine, has some advice for youth in neighboring South Sudan. He tells Ayen Bior that South Sudan will not develop on its own, and the country's potential depends on the young people's willingness to step up.
I have so many friends and fans in South Sudan, and I know that South Sudan is a country that has so much potential. But I also know that that potential is not going to lift itself until the people of South Sudan, especially the young people, rise up. Well, I acknowledge that they've been through a lot. They've got lots of challenges, but it's within those challenges that they have to rise.
Over 70% of South Sudan's population are considered the youth. And I want to talk to you, I want to ask you about the youth. You've said multiple times that this generation is the generation that will create change for Africa.
Yeah.
What is it about this generation that makes them such a change agent, as you have said?
One, because this generation, it has never been there when we are so many young people like we are today. And indeed, it has never been there when we are so informed. Well, not all of us are very educated, but I know that we have the opportunity, like social media and all the likes. We are so connected, so there's no reason that we don't constantly learn from each other. You know, information runs so fast. Africa is like one big village, so that is something that we can put to use.
You said social media, but social media, at least among South Sudanese, has been blamed for fanning a lot of the flame for tribalism and hate. So how can the youth use social media for positive change?
Well, everything that has a positivity always has a negativity as well. But again, depends who makes the assertion. For example, in Uganda, social media has been responsible for creating jobs, for technological advancement, and for communication. But again, we also have a leader that does not fall in our generation that thinks social media is about gossip and spreading hate. So it depends what we decide to use it for.
So what's your advice to the South Sudanese youth?
The South Sudanese young people should never give up. They should know that they are lucky to have a country so beautiful and so endowed with fertility, good climate, and natural resources like South Sudan. But again, it's not going to develop itself. It will take the South Sudanese young people. So let them stand up, let them be counted, and indeed, let them get practically involved in the leadership of their country, because everything is about leadership. Chinua Achebe was asked in 1980 what was wrong with Nigeria. He said it's not the lakes or rivers of Nigeria, it's not the climate or anything else, it is the leaders. And indeed in Africa, and I will be particular in South Sudan also, it's about the leaders, you know. So the young people need to step up and offer honest and dignified leadership to their country. and South Sudanese will never be the same again.
That was Ugandan pop star and politician Robert Kyagulanyi, known as Bobby Wine. He was speaking to Ayen Dengbior from Washington. Still on musicians in the Democratic Republic of Congo, rappers are getting involved in politics, including one well-known rap artist who hopes to fix the country's problems by running for a seat in parliament. Chika Odua reports for VOA from Kinshasa.
They do not sound like politicians. They do not look like them either. They are rappers, but they're getting ready to get political. It's a Saturday afternoon, and they have gathered, as they do every month, at a shopping center in Kinshasa to talk about how to do that. One of them goes to the stage to say that he's thinking of running for a local office. That was Lexus Legal, the most famous one in the group. He leads the charge, calling for rap artists to get involved in helping to fix Congo's problems. Do not hesitate to run for office, he says. If the national level is too high, go door to door to ask for support in your local communities, he adds. For 20 years, Lexus Legal has built a career with his socially conscious music, commenting on youth unemployment, corruption, and other social ills. And now, he is running for a seat in the national parliament.
Je tiens à rappeler et à souligner que ces choix, c'est pas une nouvelle carrière.
He says he wants his fans to know that he is not starting a new career. He is simply doing what comes natural to him. He has always been political, he says, as you can hear in his music. Politics and music are intertwined in the DRC. At the office grounds of the ruling party, singers and dancers are energized. President Joseph Kabila announced last month that he will step down after 17 years and has appointed a successor, Emmanuel Shadary. Local music artists usually make a living by supporting politicians. Jigoro Ekopo is one of the lead singers for the ruling party's music troupe. We are not musicians. We are not artists. We are politicians, Ekopo says. He says he supports President Kabila's vision. Clap for Shadary, clap for Shadary, he rallies the group. Criticism comes at a cost in the Democratic Republic of Congo, and the ruling party often stifles it. Six opposition candidates eyeing the presidency have been banned from running in the December polls. Bob Elvis, another popular rap artist, released a song lambasting the corruption of the political class. The rapper's family told VOA that 2 weeks ago he was picked up by state security forces and detained for days. VOA reached to Bob Elvis upon his release, but he is currently in hiding, though he's reaching out to his fans on Facebook. That is why some musicians decide to play it safe. Rihanna Prescott and her musical friends recently formed a band called Star Music. She says politics is too dirty. She avoids talking about it in her music. Music should be fun, she says, and that is why we do it. For Lexus Legal and other rappers in the DRC, music and politics cannot be separated. Chika Odua for VOA News, Kinshasa.
We now move back to South Sudan. Community leaders in Terkeke State are urging officials to sentence cattle raiders to death by firing squad. Traditional chiefs are asking state officials and national lawmakers to support a draft law that would impose death penalty for anyone found guilty of cattle raiding. Onen Walter Solomon has the story for VOA from Juba.
Community leaders and chiefs from Terekeka Center, Terekeka North, Gworo, and Nyore counties say after holding numerous peace conferences between communities aimed at ending cattle raids, reaching resolutions, and having those agreements ignored time after time, they believe imposing the death penalty for cattle raiding is the only solution. The chiefs say they cannot sit by and watch as cattle raiders continue to kill unarmed civilians, burn houses and loot or destroy property. Jackson Lukujo is the paramount chief of Terekeka North County.
We are still waiting for the government resolution to make it as a law.
Terekeka State Minister for Local Government and Law Enforcement John Kenyi says during two peace conferences held last month, participants attributed rampant killings in the area to cattle raids carried out by armed youth.
They say death penalty by hanging or firing squad to be imposed by law. We are going to present the resolution to the Council of Ministers, and from there they said to
Moses Petia, coordinator for the local NGO Community Empowerment for Progress organization in Terekeka State, says frustrated chiefs who saw little to no enforcement of previous agreements reached at past peace conferences hope a death penalty will deter armed youth from even thinking about carrying out cattle raids.
The committee that was formed by the governor were supposed to go with some of the law enforcement agencies and try the big cattle camps to identify the raided cows from among the four counties and then return them back to the rightful owners. The committee was also tasked to identify the ringleaders and bring them to book. The committee did not go back to the cattle camp to carry out their task.
Speaking in Arabic, James McCoy McCoy, a chief from Western Lake State, which borders Terekeka State, says he too supports the death penalty for cattle raiders.
We support the law not only in Terekeka, in the whole country. A person who raids cattle, kills people at night without any reason, if arrested, should be killed immediately.
Daniel Mwaka, executive director of a local NGO youth empowerment organization, does not support the death penalty, noting that many countries across the world have abolished death by hanging or firing squad.
The authorities in Terekeka State must make sure that they address the root cause of the problem, because I know there are other reasons why people are engaging themselves in robberies and killings and cattle raiding. But I know if you have a solution to that, you don't need any issue of death penalty or firing squad.
Chief Lukujo says the community leaders are conducting campaigns to educate communities in and around Terekeka State about the proposal to impose the death penalty for cattle raiding. For VOA News, I am Onen Walter Solomon in Juba.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the song Jere Jere by Dynamic.
All right, Sudanese child. ooh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Ooh, yeah. Ruka music. Auma. Yeah. Jere jere fidunia de
jere jere
sibuna si sambala
jere jere
suata ta dunia de
suata suata
nasi mutu sambala
suata
sunu batal fidunia de mama
sunu batal
nasi maderu geni sawa
sunu batal
wenu salam takulio
wenu wenu salam
Si maderu geni sawa
wenu salam
jiran bada mashaki
jiran bada mashaki
asana nami lotuko
lotuko lotuko yeah
do you faba jafi be
fibe
asana nami loko ya
loko ya loko ya ya
tere tere bidunia de
tere tere
sibuna si sambala
tere tere
Suata ta dunia de mama
Suata
Nasi mutu sambala
We have been listening to Dynamic with the song Jere Jere. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for spending your evening with us. What did you think about the show? Please drop us a line. You can find us at SouthSudan@voanews.com. You can also contact us on our Facebook. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Sambala.